and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
Been well, Rob, you?
Good, never better. The sun's shining, it's warm up here. And as you know, Mickey, my Rangers taking the first game in their showdown in the NHL semifinal Stanley Cup Series. So let's keep our fingers crossed that they keep the momentum going.
Well, they seem to be good at winning those close games.
Yeah, another 2-1 victory. We're continuing our look at naturally occurring actinides. Last time out, Mickey, we looked at a whole slew of them among the common features. They're all radioactive. We decided that we should devote an entire program to plutonium, number 94, I believe, on the periodic table, discovered back in 1941, kept secret, though, for a number of years, wasn't it?
Yes, it was kept secret for good reason. It's the was the main component in the first atomic bomb. So, transuranic actinide. It's naturally occurring in high-grade uranium ores, but, of course, not discovered until after the fact that it was made synthetically. It's the heaviest element remaining from the Big Bang, and interestingly enough, its symbol, PU, was really a joke by the guys at Cal Berkeley that discovered it, but it made its way into the periodic table anyway.
Where does plutonium come from, Mickey?
Well, it comes from the, other than the man-made versions, it comes from neutron capture and very high-grade uranium ores. It's got six common isotopes. The most important one is plutonium-239, mm-hmm. Which is not only fissile, which means it will sustain chain reactions, as does uranium-235, uranium-233, but it also has critical mass, meaning if it gets to a certain weight in a sphere, it will spontaneously produce fission products and then maintain a chain reaction. Therefore, its usefulness originally was in atomic bombs. It composed the core of the first atomic bomb, Trinity Site, New Mexico, mm-hmm. my home state, in 1945. That bomb was a Fat Man type, which uses a plutonium core, and that's also the type that was used for bombing of Nagasaki.
And after World War II, another war broke out, Mickey, and that, of course, was the Cold War between the East and the West. That's when production of weapons-grade plutonium really took off, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and really that's the reason that we have nuclear reactors based on fissionable uranium. You can design nuclear reactors to produce uranium-239, which then can be upgraded into weapons-grade plutonium, defined as plutonium with less than 7% of another isotope, plutonium-240, which is a contaminant. And so the earliest electrical-generating nuclear power stations were really based on the fact that the U.S. wanted a source of plutonium-239 to make atomic bombs.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've read, Mickey, that just over one-third or about one-third of the energy produced in a lot of the nuclear power plants in operations comes from plutonium. Is that correct?
Well, it probably is because, you know, they're started as uranium-235 reactors, and they generate plutonium-239, so a significant amount of energy would come from the fission of plutonium and its byproducts. Mm-hmm. You know, the Cold War production of these was tremendous, and the U.S. estimated 103 tons of weapons-grade plutonium, and back in the USSR, estimated at 170 tons. So, mm-hmm. So we have a legacy of plutonium as byproducts of nuclear reactions that we have a hard time deciding what to do with now.
Yeah, and that's we're going to be talking about that, I think, in fairly great depth next program out. But mm-hmm. I've also read that we were looking at this was used to power the Voyager spacecraft launched back in the 70s. I think even artificial heart pacemakers originally.
Well, yeah, it does have some minor uses. I mean, it really is all about the bomb, but mm-hmm. there's another isotope, plutonium-238, which undergoes, as most of the isotopes, alpha particle delay with a half-life of 88 years, and it generates quite a lot of heat. 1 kilogram of plutonium-238 will generate 570 watts of heat. Well, that's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So space probes, including all the way back to the Apollo moon missions, mm-hmm. Galileo, Voyager, one of the Mars rovers used plutonium-238 for both power and heat. And early heart pacemakers, as you alluded to, mm-hmm. also used plutonium. Now, those have been replaced with lithium pacemakers now, but I read something that's estimated there's still 100 people in the world walking around with plutonium pacemakers in their hearts.
Wow, which raises the question, just how dangerous is plutonium? Because it is a toxic.
Well, it is, but surprisingly enough, it's not particularly dangerous. It's really, the real danger lies in the potential for a nuclear proliferation of bombs, but of course it's a very toxic element with heavy metal effects. It's mm-hmm. it's radioactive, but it really is not much concern from its radioactivity because it only produces alpha particles, which, as you know, can be stopped by a simple one sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so rare in the Earth. Most of that, of course, man-made, from atmospheric and underwater atomic bomb tests, and mainly in the during the Cold War. Really, there's been no measurable increases in deaths or cancer from plutonium. Much more dangerous are some of the other actinides, and especially the short-term daughter products that come from those that emit beta particles or gamma rays.
How many tons of the stuff in the biosphere? I mean, you know, they were testing nuclear bombs and weapons back in the 50s and 60s, so, you know, there was a bit of a spillover effect in terms of this stuff being in our biosphere, correct?
Well, yes, and but it's, you know, it was a period of time when there was lots of atmospheric testing in the 50s and 60s where there was concern about radioactive fallout, but plutonium was really a small amount of that. You know, there are places that are contaminated, mainly around old nuclear processing facilities that made plutonium, and that would be the real concern, other than the fact that, you know, you can use plutonium to make a nuclear bomb, and that's the real critical concern here. Only really very trace amounts of plutonium in terrestrial soils and mm-hmm. and water. So
and the big concern is, what do we do with a lot of the waste from this?
Well, so we've got these nuclear power plants that produced lots of plutonium, which is made into weapons grade plutonium and significant tonnages of those. But there are solutions, and those would include mixed oxide fuel. So they take the waste products from domestic nuclear power production, and they use that since the 1980s, especially in places like France. They burn that in fast nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take mixed oxide fuel, which is mainly products from the original nuclear fuel, and they get contaminated with isotopes that inhibit the nuclear reaction after a while. But you can turn that into mixed oxide fuel, and you can add 6% weapons-grade plutonium to that and burn it again in a fast nuclear reactor or even a breeder reactor, which actually creates more fissional products in each cycle than it consumes, so it is basically a self-sustaining reaction. There's a lot of plutonium around,
yeah.
But it's very difficult to make weapons-grade plutonium. Part of the concern is really with so-called dirty bombs, where you could take the waste from nuclear power plants, so-called reactor-grade plutonium, and create a dirty bomb, which would not fission, which would not not really produce a bomb, but it would be what they would call fizzle, and it could would react release a bunch of radioactivity for quite a long period of time.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note, Mickey, because we're going to be pursuing this really a little bit further in depth next time out.
Well, we are. Next time we're going to talk about the nuclear waste generated from both bomb manufacture and from nuclear power plants, mm-hmm. and the solutions going forward for this sort of stuff. You know, we had at one point a solution in the U.S. with Yucca Mountain for burying mm-hmm. our weapons-grade plutonium, but you know, the politics of that never succeeded, although the science was pretty good on it. Mm-hmm. So we've got a nuclear waste problem and that we need to deal with, and we'll discuss that next time.
Okay, great stuff, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulte, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.